And good evening, good evening, good evening, and welcome, welcome, welcome. This is your Business and Economic Zone here on your number one talk radio station of Eagle FM. Welcome to today's session. In terms of also the recently held discussion you just heard there on the home run segment coming with Invalda there, getting into some nitty gritties in terms of an aspect of fishing. Let's call it that, an aspect of fishing. Now that was the program just before. Before we get here, which also takes on a different environmental perspective, because for you to look at the key sort of like discussion point that or discussion that stems from what the home run just had or just conducted now, I take you into one which is actually factored into a discussion that's going to happen tomorrow with the Green Hydrogen conference that is slated for tomorrow, the 16th of August. Just to indicate to you, I'm not going to talk about the Green Hydrogen project. I'm not going to talk about it. But I'm actually going to talk about the bigger umbrella discussion that is out there. The bigger umbrella discussion that we in Namibia are seeing every year in, year out, within terms of the climatic conditions or some of the changing conditions that we've witnessed. I'll point them out to you as well. And then also the main discussion, the main point, because green hydrogen energy has to do with the energy discussion, a transition from fossil fuel or what they deem as to be the dirty fuels or the harmful fuels to a green sustainable picture. That's been most of our energy discussions here on the Business and Economic Zone. I'm not going to center on a green transition based, you know, or transitioning to green energy I'm not going to talk about that. We've already not exhausted. It can't be exhausted, because up and until the projects start running, we can then perhaps look at, you know, the trickle down impacts or the trickle down bonuses or advantages and any other disadvantages that might come about in terms of, does it actually solve the climate issue or the global warming or the climate change component? Does it actually? And how does it impact economically flowing through every stage and every corner of an economic perspective? I almost said circus, but you can't call it a circus. The reason why I am indicating to you I'm not going to touch on the green hydrogen energy component is because, quite frankly, modern day economies run on energy. In order for a modern day economy to function, you need energy, a sustainable supply that impacts every aspect of daily life. Every corner of daily life gets impacted by energy. This can be from your power utility, like NamPower in our sense, or this can be from the petrol diesel components, meaning that which we buy every month, every day, daily, every minute, every hour at your local petrol station or service station. It's those two energy components. So you and I, we know what the current energy situation is. Any economy in the world, every economy in the world runs on these two energy sources. Well, also those that are deemed as the advanced economies that have nuclear energy, because renewable energy is not being adapted for the entire grids. Wherever you go, even in the most advanced economies, they're not being adapted for those purposes in order to roll it or to have a full scale rollout of renewable energy. They're not doing it. You hear of a town that runs or that is supplied with wind power here, but most of the electricity comes from a power station in a specific region. And why do you talk about renewable energy then? But we're not talking about that. Tonight's discussion is, what is the major cost implication for climate change on the continent? And we've got three key, I'll call them resources in terms of our literature or the literature review or the literature that I've brought along. But we start from the biggest authority, that being the global one, the United Nations. We start from the biggest authority. The biggest authority is the one that is sounding the alarm bell. The biggest authority, back in October of last year, 2021, noted that rising climate change risks are occurring across the African continent. Now we are in Africa, so we are impacted. This is our stress point. This is where our concern lies. Because the green hydrogen energy discussion takes a look at providing a sustainable, greener, friendlier energy substitute or alternative to fossil fuel energy. Now the fossil fuel energies, guys, are crude oil or Brent crude oil or oil, and it's coal-powered power stations. or coal power stations. Coal. Then you get the natural gas, which is LNG, liquid natural gas, which has become the main political sore point there in the Ukraine crisis, because Germany realized that they need Russian liquid natural gas. So do Sweden. So do Finland, Latvia, Estonia. So do the rest of Western Europe. And this specific commodity is a non-renewable natural resource. It's a non-renewable. You cannot replenish it quick enough to say it's renewable. Sunlight you can, because the sun will only die a whole bunch of million years from now. So to see it as an imminent sort of like energy source that will not be replenished is a fallacy. Well, it's partially incorrect and partially correct, because there's no such thing as infinity. Infinity only means that you won't be able to live long enough to see whether or not this energy source will be depleted for its life expectancy, not for your life expectancy. Now, getting to our discussion, the state of the Climate in Africa 2020 report highlighted that the continent's disproportionate vulnerability, and also reveals how investing in climate adaptation, early warning systems, and weather and climate services can pay off. Now, this was in terms of they took a look in terms of looking at what the continent has, what is under threat for the continent, what can change. Now, the most important thing on the continent has always been, and we all know this being inhabitants of the continent, is meaning being that we treasure water and rainfall, especially very highly. Well, anywhere you go in the world, rainfall is treasured. Except for now, in the form of when it comes through, in the sense like excessive rainfall and thunderstorms and storms and cyclones and hurricanes. You know, those things that come with too much wind power and just too much rain, rainwater as well. You know, which becomes a major inconvenience. But it's Mother Nature. What can we do? Now, the key thing here is this World Meteorological Report that formed part of this basis indicated a handful of aspects in terms, or the guy for the World Meteorological Organization said that climate indicators in Africa during 2021 or during 2020 were characterized by continued warming temperatures, meaning it's becoming warmer, and it's also accelerating a sea level rise, extreme weather and climate events. Extreme weather scenarios has been what we have been seeing here in the southern Africa for the past 3 years. And I say past 3 years consecutively. If you guys can remember back to the three tropical storms that Mozambique had been experiencing, the first one ending up in Zimbabwe.
Kukurukana yowamba, kukuningisa ozere, nukusespika na mpito domgara mokagura mkisigemeke. Ramangako, uwera o HIV. Ayo, kukupoperan, tani kuirukana maokoko. Tokoras gara, ninkawa kurugana yowamba. Mokutura mwe hundiro lieyo wamba zuma okoko, ndimo gwana kuma pukuru kumanzi. Tumako WhatsApp kwa nomoro zoe utantandatu zime, ntatwe utantane, mbali ntambali, mbali ntane. Ndidingura kwa Facebook, kwa VMMC Namibia.
Speak your mind while respecting the opinions of others.
How can you say Namibia was brought on a silver platter when so many people were massacred?
No, that's not what I mean. Mm-hmm. I mean on the silver platter
in terms of the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. You know, there were schools, there were roads, there were...
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
To grab that victory against Ivory Coast will be a big one for us. It will be the first...
For social position to raise a child. What does that mean? Baby dumping.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
The commander say hold fire, they hold fire. When the commander says fire, they fire. You know, they are trained to kill. We are trained to arrest people and bring them before court.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
That's why some of us wear unbranded clothes. Because it's about selling their product.
So talk on Eagle FM. Eagle FM, the eye.
Now, coming back from the extended break right there, the important thing in terms of this UN sort of like state of the weather situation, or state of the global weather component and how it impacts our continent, is that this World Meteorological Report indicated that millions of people on the continent are at risk. Now, millions of people, and this even trickles through the African Union Commission, the Economic Commission of Africa, by which they also, through their also another subdivision of the AU, the Africa Climate Policy Center, noted that by the year 2030, approximately 118 million extremely poor people on the continent will be exposed to drought, floods, and extreme heat, which will hinder progress towards poverty alleviation and growth. Now, this is based upon the notion or their observations and forecasts that increased weather and climate variability is disrupting lives and economies. And this is according to a Mr. Joseph Sacco, Commissioner for the Rural Economy and Agriculture in the AU Commission. Now, just before the ad break, I wanted to give you the example in terms of the past 3 years. And this is widely publicized. So if you are asking me, Dwight, how can you remember these events? Well, they still exist online. You just have to go and search them up. Is the past three, well, this year, last year, or the year and the year before, in terms of the extreme weather conditions that Southern Africa has been experiencing, especially coming through Mozambique. Now, I mentioned to you guys the tropical storm that started in the Indian Ocean, drifted over northern Mozambique, ended up in Zimbabwe. Luckily, it stopped only in Zimbabwe because the understanding by meteorologists are that tropical storms, they are powerful over the sea, but as they move towards land, or as they say, they make landfall, they weaken over a surface area of land. Now, once again, you started seeing heightened flood warnings and so forth just last year, 2021, and a similar scenario almost now in 2022, beginning 2022. Remember, most of Namibia's rainwater, the system that we get our rainwater from actually starts over the Indian Ocean, that side of Madagascar, and then it pulls into Southern Africa from that direction. However, most of our cold fronts, winter scenarios come through from the Benguela cold current, as well as also the cold fronts that are permeating through from the South Pole through the Western Cape up to us. Those cold fronts come from the South Pole. Those extreme cold fronts. Now, we've got to understand a scenario here. Just 2 weeks back, the Afrikaans Daily indicated that there's a promising scenario that the La Nino scenario, the La Nino conditions that Namibia has been enjoying will still persist for this coming rainy season. La Nino means average to above average rainfall being expected. El Nino is the opposite, below average to almost no rainfall being experienced, resulting in a drought scenario. That is El and La Nino. Or La Nina and El Nino. Sorry. Now, if you are observing these fluctuating scenarios, on the one side, yes, some of us would go like, yay, so there is some sort of positivity to look out for. Yes and a no. Yes and a no. For some reason, and I'll mention this freakish situation. If you guys all remember, just as Neckartal Dam was completed, suddenly we had this freak rainfall season, especially in the south of the country, and Neckartal Dam reached capacity, 100%, even more than 100% capacity. That was our last year, ne? 2021, March 2021. The dam was only completed 2020. The dam is full March 2021. The expectations were that continuous rainfall over many windows of rainy seasons would you know, systematically fill it up. Within 4 months, that dam was full. 4 months. Case in point for 2022, we didn't hear much complaints nor inconveniences coming from the southern regions in terms of the rainfall for this year, which could only spell one thing, that, you know, last year seemed like a freak situation. And mind you, that dam is still full. That dam is still full from last year's rain. Now, the situation there is, obviously, it bodes well if you had to look at that one anecdote, that one example of climate change in Namibia's context, wherein a dam, which is actually a superstructure, it's a super dam, it's a superstructure, that was planned to reach its full capacity in terms of its holding capacity over multiple rainy seasons, meaning multiple years, was actually filled in 4 months. And so the second scenario is that the only drought-stricken region that we have is the Kunene region. It's the Kunene region. The only other anomalies that we observe are that crop farmers and crop producers in the crop-rich areas of our country indicate that the rainfall comes later every year. Later every year. Anticipations are always that the rain should have fallen in specific parts by November, end of October, leading into November, beginning December. But then the rain only starts from December. Now, these key indications, guys, point towards this next scenario that the UN indicates here as well, wherein they note that in sub-Saharan Africa, climate change can also further lower gross domestic product by up to 3% by the year 2050, and that this also presents a serious challenge for climate adaptation and resilience actions, because not only are physical conditions getting worse, but also that the number of people being affected is increasing. Now, if you're going to ask me, you know, what is the scenario with here in Namibia? Well, there is one benefit we do have. We have an organization by the name of the Environmental Investment Fund, which means that Namibia actually has a plan through an organization to look towards, you know, how prepared can we be as a country in terms of in the face of the global climate challenge or climate change discussion. So we have an organization that has been established therefrom. And I'm not even going to delve into their scope, into their mandate, because that would mean we would have to focus, you know, entirely on what projects they are doing. We're not going to do that for now. But we know there's a body, there's an organization that exists. We know there's an organization that exists. The second scenario from there is, not the second scenario, sorry. The second point from there is the cost implications according to the UN. Now, that report that the UN had prepared, which is actually based upon 2020 statistics, but it was only sort of like released last year, this report that I'm talking about, indicated or estimated that an investment in the climate adaptation for sub-Saharan Africa would cost between 30 to 50 billion US dollars each year over the next 10 years, or roughly 2 to 3% of the continent's GDP. Now, look, guys, let's understand the key contributing factors to the climate change component. The main culprit of the climate change discussion has been industrialization. You cannot ignore it. You cannot even drive around it. You cannot even avoid it. You can't even come to me and say it's incorrect farming practices here, or it's people that practice harmful conservation theories or implement such discussion points. It's not that. We have to, and I have to indicate this and reinforce this with you. It's a select group of countries. We know who they are. They're mostly in the European zone, and they are North America, and also on the far side of Asia, who have the advantage of being known as the developed economies and countries. We are still developing. We are Africa's youngest democracy. We are Africa's youngest country. Well, it's under correction, because if we have to factor in Western Sahara, because Western Sahara, I think, is not entirely yet independent from Morocco. But Namibia is the youngest. No, not Namibia. It's South Sudan. Sorry, South Sudan. So we lost that mantle in terms of being the youngest new addition. But we were the last country that gained its independence in terms of being, you know, occupied and also colonized in a sense, if you have to count that in. But we ourselves know how fragile our situation is. How fragile it is. We're the only country in the world with two deserts in its borders. Well, the whether you know it is the Kalahari or the Kalahari or the Kalahari, doesn't matter which term you use. It's a desert that stretches from Namibia into Botswana into South Africa. So three countries occupied or have this desert in their border areas, which indicates to you it's a significant environmental and ecological location. Now, to factor in the costs, this 30 to 50 billion by 2030 or by 2050 is immense, because on the sidelines, African countries are still talking about, you know, actually enforcing the Africa Free Trade Agreement. Now, the Free Trade Agreement, guys, would obviously mean expansion of business processes to benefit members on the continent. To benefit members. Here in Namibia, we are still trying to figure out, you know, how to best serve various farming groups in our country. I say farming groups because there's a clear distinction between the northern communal area meat producers, the private meat producers south of the red line, the crop growing communities, as well as the major crop producers.
The International University of Management, IUM, witete umbo no namba no kushivefa kuja, umanjirorongo oturataya academic year 2023. Ukapatruka, enderera pa ife urikore paparoe mo education, ukarolongi fikora, ile ukufe o health and social science, oshoma ifano information and communication technology. O strategic management and leadership, na taimonika no tourism, osho hospitality and event management, business administration ikuterera, environmental studies and postgraduate studies at Shota Demonica. Wherede oto monika ko website www.ium.edu.na. Ile utarere po embiro da IUM tikulipo pepe. Mo venduka, mongu renguru, mongu ediva, no mompae, utadi monika. Wereru tu hangi kongodi ya venduka, 061, ongodi, ne, natunatu, omaveri hamano, inda komesho, kufetokorori rimonjira, toiko mbona kui wainerao, pamwena IUM.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
Now we come back from that extended break. The major thing, guys, is here in Namibia, we still have to find the balancing act of, in terms of presenting our own agricultural, sort of like sector as in a unified sense that actually benefits the country entirely, because the major concern from the climate change discussions has always been food security. Food security always features in there. Now, food security, unfortunately, is put under threat by the phenomenon known as the global weather patterns, because no one can control the weather. No one can. If you come to me with telling me the stories about people shooting the clouds, that's not controlling the weather. Please, guys. That is not controlling the weather. Controlling the weather means you can predict it, you can redirect it, and you know how to purpose it for your own purposes. However, climate change on the continent is a different discussion. Now, Sub-Saharan Africa is all the countries below the Sahara Desert. which includes us, has a 95% rain-fed agriculture. Has 95% of rain-fed agriculture. A large share of agriculture in GDP and employment adds to the vulnerability because we have so many people that are working, dependent on, and also investing in the agricultural sector, even in our country. We are still busy with the understanding of, you know, how to make the green schemes feasible. They are feasible. They are feasible. Let me correct that. They are feasible. But making them viable, commercially functioning, is another discussion. Is another discussion. Now, obviously, a green scheme, as you can hear by the word green, means it needs water, most probably. But the green schemes themselves will even be put under strain or will be exposed to climate change because, let's say, the weather pattern, the rainy season or the rain patterns change. And then, will they still be viable? Will they still be feasible? Will they still be able to try and achieve the goal that they were set out or established to do? Will it? Will it push most of the industrial process that is related to the agricultural sector to start buying and importing? Because guys, there's two scenarios that take place. Currently in Europe, you have to understand in Europe, what is happening currently is that they've heightened heat waves and heightened evaporation rates taking place, resulting in the major river systems of Europe, Western Europe, drying up because of accelerated evaporation. Also understand that these countries usually have two rainy seasons. I'm giving you an anomaly that's happening on another part of the planet and it's climate change. For you to understand, perhaps the opposite would take place that links into the forecast for expected La Nina circumstances. Now, Europe is experiencing a rainless summer so far. A rainless summer. They usually have summer rains because they also have rain in their winter period, winter seasons that leads into their snow, where they experience snow. So they've got various forms of precipitation. Now, if you see that scenario in terms of their rivers are drying up because of heightened evaporation rates, the Spanish, the French, the Portuguese, the Italians, the English are now experiencing bushfires. Something you and I, we are used to. If we hear of a bushfire or felt fire, we know it as something, okay, it happens, it just needs to be contained. Because on most cases, some of these felt fires, bushfires occur on commercial farming land, or they occur in tourist destinations like a conservation area or a national park or natural park. Such scenarios when the animals can't run anywhere, or they are protected plant species in those specific areas. So it's actually two economies or two industries that will be impacted: a tourism economy and a agricultural economy, which obviously needs to be protected. Hence the need for firefighting services to respond to the emergency. But if you have to look at Europe, they don't know what to do with their bushfires. They don't know. Australia just 3 months back. No, not three. I'm lying. Not three. Not so far back. Is it May? In the month of May, Australia was being flooded. In the middle of the year, they said this is unheard of. Australia was being flooded. It's not the western coast of Australia. No, the eastern coast of Australia was being flooded. They were getting too much rainfall just before the winter season. Remember, we're in the southern hemisphere. Countries in the southern hemisphere, some countries have similar climatic patterns, depending on where you find yourselves. Obviously, Australia is based or is surrounded by two warm ocean scenarios or oceans, being Pacific on the one end and the Indian Ocean on the other end. Namibia only has the Atlantic Ocean, where we've got the cold Benguela Current running all along our coastline, which explains the Namib Desert, because if we have hot air moving over our country, the cold Benguela Current brings cold air from the sea. Thus, you find these two cold air systems clashing. Clashing. And it's one of the reasons why tourists can't understand why we actually have a cold beach. If you go to the beach there, Tswakop, it's cold water. It's icy water. There, during winter or during the coldest parts of the Benguela Current, it can get to minus 21 degrees Celsius. That means you need that full bathing suit scenario to get into that water. It helps to understand sometimes the odd weather conditions that Tswakop and Balfour Bay experience, where if we are hot, they are cold. If we are cold, they are hot. I don't know, guys. Please don't ask me. But I've done my own little, you know, literature read-up. Now, the climate change discussion, guys, is a serious one. It's a serious one. Now, remember, I'm clearly staying away from an energy discussion, because it's the energy consumption or the need for energy that actually led to, and also the affiliated industrial processes and actions that are putting us in this conundrum, in this dilemma, in this problem. That means we have to closely observe, and this comes through even with the discussions we've had here on the Business and Economic Zone, the BEZ, with myself, you guys, the callers and listeners who have indicated, listen, if we are going to try and pursue an industrial industry or sector, you know, things need to be done. But we need to keep in mind, it is the industrial processes that brought us to this global point, to this global, discussion. Global warming, climate change scenario. Now, I factor that in because climate change, some reports, the report that I had last year, the one that I downloaded, that became a sort of like a sore point just before COP26 there in Glasgow, was a report in terms of the various countries and their contributing levels towards the climate, towards global warming or climate change. Now, agriculture was one of the main drivers of the climate change discussion. You see, we cannot function in a silo of isolation or in isolation of anything. You cannot say, let's for example say they are industry leaders in the transport sector, they are industry leaders in the agricultural sector, they are industry leaders in the mining sector, and they are industry leaders, for example, let's say in just other parts of manufacturing or other types of manufacturing. Now, we cannot come as climate concerned citizens of Namibia saying, yeah, it's just mining that's the issue, or yeah, it's because Von Eck power station is a coal powered power station. It's not just those two actors that it has been indicated. They've indicated in that report that countries like Brazil, Argentina, and Australia, which are bigger beef producers than Namibia and South Africa, are one of the reasons why agriculture is under the magnifying glass, because they found out, yes, and I know you guys will laugh, but I'll still mention it for interest's sake. They've indicated, the various climate scientists that the UN has contracted to study the global carbon emissions or carbon footprint situation from each industry. They have to look at each industry. They found out that farting cattle is an issue. Guys, believe me, I laughed first. I didn't believe it until I went and read why Brazil and Argentina were unhappy with being indicated in that report for the biggest contributing countries. The countries contributing the most through their various representative, or let's call it their strong industries. farting cattle. They found out the need, especially in Brazil, the need for more grazing or more farmland or more rangeland. Because in Brazil, they have something by the name of cattle ranches, a ranch. A ranch is just another form of saying it's a cattle farmer, a rancher. Now, a cattle ranch, supposedly in Brazil, they require more grazing land. So if they want more, you guys remember that little exercise we used to do in high school where they would, you know, indicate to you the carrying capacity of grazing for the amount of cattle or the amount of herding of animals or herds, animal herds that you want to put on a specific patch of land. Now, if you've got too many animals that eat grass or that eat plants, you know, herbivores, the carrying capacity of the land is exhausted. Too few, meaning there's too few animals, meaning it's in favor of the land, meaning there's enough replenishment cycles that it can enjoy and so forth. Now in Brazil, they found out that the industrial complex or the agricultural complex requires farmers to have massive tracts of grazing land, which they actually take from the Amazon forest, meaning they clear it illegally. This has also been proved that some of these actions are also illegal. And the Amazon forest is the world's biggest center for lungs, meaning it takes out a lot of the carbon out of the atmosphere and then releases a lot of oxygen. They also realized that there is an illegal land clearing campaign going on by cattle farmers in Brazil. And these farmers are clearing more land to buy more cattle in order to supply the exporting or the export meat markets that they are selling to. Argentina was doing the same thing. Now they indicated if you have a
Paratus Mobile LTE. Everything you want, whenever you want it. Start uploading, downloading, liking, and sharing all your experiences with the world. Starting from 345 Namibian dollars per month, excluding VAT for postpaid. Get online with high-speed internet the way you want it. Visit paratus.africa/NA for more information. Always
Paratus. Now coming back, where I left off in terms of the agricultural sector also being seen as one of the major contributors towards the climate change threat is the agricultural process in some countries like Brazil and Argentina and Australia has a function of looking almost like a corporate entity, meaning mass production is the key. So they realized if you've got cattle concentrated in one area and all those cows decide to fart simultaneously. Guys, please, this is what I read. I'm not making things up. You can find it in that report. It's for the COP26. You just have to Google search it by typing in climate report 2021 that was a major controversy for Saudi Arabia, Brazil, Argentina. You'll find that report. It'll come up even. That specific report indicated the process that can contribute. It's not just about having the animals, it's the process by which it is being done that can contribute to the global warming discussion. Now, this is key because if we have to look at Namibia and we have to now go and point fingers at various sectors in our country saying, yeah, you guys are contributing to this aspect or you guys are doing this, we cannot just go and say it's mining or it's a manufacturing process or it's a power station that NamPower is in charge of or it's a, what's the other one's name? That I wanted to factor in, or it's a, what do they call it? Or it's because people own 5 cars in our country. One family can own 5 cars. It's just an example. Or it's something else, meaning the practices that we use, or we import a lot of petrol and diesel. It's not just that. You have to look across the board. But understand, Namibia's carbon footprint is pretty small. I say pretty small because it's almost negligible, but it doesn't mean that you do not have a carbon footprint. Even you and I as individuals, as individual humans, we do have a carbon footprint. What you exhale is carbon dioxide. What you exhale is carbon dioxide. Well, if we have to be entirely scientific, everything on this planet is made from carbon. Carbon is the basic building block for every organism and item on this planet. You find carbon almost everywhere. But that's another discussion as well. Now, the key thing here is we have a challenge. A challenge which cascades down from the AU level into the Namibian level, being that a large share of agriculture in GDP and employment adds to vulnerability. A large share of agriculture in GDP and employment adds to vulnerability. Our aim, as being guided by the three ministries. Yeah, because lands and resettlement, and then you've got, what's the other one's name? Ministry of Environment, and then you've got Ministry of Agriculture. Those three ministries work, almost have like overlapping functions in terms of their aim at looking at a sustainable platform in our country. Firstly being food security come from agriculture. But then agriculture also has to look at the water supply for said food security. Environment looks at tourism. And also has to factor in water supply into tourism, because you need, you know, you can't just present a dry situation to tourists. Plus also, there's the natural habitat also to contend with, because if it was left up to agriculture, everyone would then want a farm and everyone would then want to plant, and not leaving any living space for the natural environment. And the natural environment is key, because the natural environment actually adapted to be here. That's now everything from the animals to the lizards to the birds to the trees to the plant species that you find in Namibia is indigenous to Namibia. They earned their place to live here. They earned their place to live here. Now, there's a specific reason, guys, I'm staying away from energy. There's a specific reason. Because that would just be guiding you down the wrong rabbit hole. Or a rabbit hole which is justified, but which does not actually explain the whole picture to you. Now, 7 of 10 countries on the African continent that are the most vulnerable to climate change are in Africa. 7 of the top 10 most vulnerable countries to climate change are on this continent. Namibia is one of them. In 2015, 4 of these African countries that were ranked among the 10 countries most affected are Mozambique in first position, Malawi in third, Ghana and Madagascar in joint 8th. Namibia would be there, guys, because, as I said, we've got 2 deserts in our country. 2 deserts look nice, touristy, for a tourist destination sense. But for you and I that are inhabitants and citizens of this country, 2 deserts means you have to stave off desertification. You have to keep it at bay, so it doesn't encroach even further inwards. And you also have to maintain the natural environment that has to be maintained with them. And this would then mean being reliant on rainfall. And this would then also mean hoping that other countries practice sort of like good standards of, of emitting or reducing their carbon footprints. Now, from 2008 to 2011, drought caused economic losses equivalent to 4% of Djibouti's GDP per annum. Djibouti is that small country there at the Horn of Africa between Somalia and Kenya and Eritrea. Yeah, Somalia, Kenya and Eritrea. Djibouti is pretty small. I mean, it's as big as the capital, as Windhoek. But Djibouti has been vulnerable. Djibouti finds themselves in a vulnerable area of the continent. That's also to explain to you, because Somalia has been experiencing a drought for the past year. Somalia. The World Food Program had declared the floods in Mozambique a level 3 emergency. This was in the 2019 Cyclone Idai, the cyclone that I mentioned. A level 3 emergency on par with Yemen and Syria's own humanitarian situations. Because Yemen at one stage also had not received enough rainfall. 90% of infrastructure was destroyed in Beira, Mozambique, the epicenter of that cyclone. Beira is also known as Mozambique's fourth largest city, with an important energy for infrastructure investments and also natural gas deposits off the coastline. Now, natural gas obviously points towards a fossil fuel once again, and also an economy dependent upon fossil fuel sales. So that would point towards a diversification discussion as well. But that's in Mozambique scenario. Namibia also has a threat in terms of trying to stick to diversifying their own economy. I mean, we've had that article in our the Villager e-paper platform in terms of the threat of not diversifying our economy. It's a main talking point. It's a main talking point. One key one would obviously be in terms of, you know, expanding, let's for example say like electricity generation. Not expanding it, but meaning, you know, being a generator ourselves. Now, another UN commissioned research estimated that the cost of adapting to the climate, as mentioned, would stand at $50 billion a year by the year 2050. And this is only for the continent. And that is if the global temperature increase is kept within a 2 degrees Celsius range above the pre-industrial levels. Now, climate change represents a major threat to the continent, guys, as mentioned, because of the SDGs that cascade from the UN's SDGs. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report of 2018 indicated that a grave consequences of a temperature increase above 1.5 degrees Celsius would be catastrophic for our continent. Would be. I say would be. Now, according to what is needed by the year 2030, what is needed? The continent will need investments of over $3 trillion in mitigation, in climate mitigation and climate adaptation in order to implement its own NDCs, its nationally determined contributions. And these NDCs link back towards the Paris Agreement, which is the COP21 agreement. Last year was COP26. The Paris Agreement is known as COP21. Now remember what was the major drawbacks from COP26 last year? Where we as the continent pointed out, especially to Europe and North America, but you guys did not even meet the targets of COP21, the Paris Agreement. Meaning, release funding. Or indicate the budgeting parameters. Or indicate what is going to be done with what money. Because funding, money is needed. You can't just throw things and fancy words in the air, write nice reports and pay these people for reports, but you're not going to allocate budgets. Because obviously a report would indicate a recommendation. And obviously a recommendation means it links in with something that can be used to do the mitigation impacts or to commit to an action. Now, the AU itself, guys, had authored a report back in October 2011 itself, known as the cost of adaptation to climate change on the continent. Now, this is important because we already as a continent identified, yo, we are at a major risk. We are exposed. Now, I gave you small examples of scenarios in our country, freak rainfalls, patterns, the very odd migration of an insect known as the red locust all the way from Africa's east coast down to Africa's southwestern coast. Very, very, very odd. Very, very odd migration that occurred there. And this key indication, guys, is that the AU themselves identified that our continent is the most vulnerable region in the world. This vulnerability, which is coupled with the continent's negligible contribution to current and or historic emissions, means that adaptation spending is the continent's climate investment priority, meaning it has become our priority. It needs to become our priority. You see, guys, even if you're a crop producer, the type of pesticide that you have to use for your crops, Even if you're a livestock farmer, the type of, what do they call that thing? When you dip your animals. You guys know what I mean? You know, that solution that is used in order to get rid of lice and ticks on animals, especially cattle and goats and sheep. Since you need water, that chemical itself should not be harmful to the natural environment. Because you and I, we know how chemically polluted water is discarded. It's thrown onto the ground. The ground then absorbs it. You don't know. I don't know if there's an underwater river or underwater aquifer or underwater, underground water body. And that water absorbs, trickles through the soil, surface soil, through the ground, into that aquifer. Or that underground water source. And then what happens? The water is contaminated with a lab-made chemical. A lab-made chemical. Now, we're not done with this climate discussion. We're not done, but we have reached the end of tonight's session here of the Business and Economic Zone. And what is key is that the important takeaways here is that we have to be mindful of where we want to see ourselves as a country. But before that, we're quickly stepping into a short break before we end.
So, jy het dit gedoen. Jy het jou laat besny.
Yep,
dit was baie dapper. Was dit nie vrek seer nie?
Dit was net so effens seer, maar dit is die moeite werd om myself teen seksueel oordraagbare infeksies te beskerm. En dit is soveel makliker om skoon te hou.
Wel, as jy dit so stel, dan moet ek dit dalk ook laat doen.
Bra, dit is die regte ding om te doen. Man Up, kry 'n besnyding. Om 'n gratis besnyding te bespreek of om meer uit te vind, stuur 'n WhatsApp boodskap na 081-309-2729 of besoek ons Facebookblad by VMMC Namibia.
Now coming back from that quick break, the indications, not the indications, but the takeaway component here, because we're not done yet with this discussion, we're not done, there's a lot of information on it, and you know, this is just the right platform here on the Business and Economic Zone for us to also divulge into, to get into, to put our teeth in, is key because we cannot ignore the climate. We cannot ignore the impacts that we are observing. I do not know if you guys are observing it internationally, but we have to be aware, take cognizance of events that are taking place. Because, guys, I'll stress this again in terms of this example. Africa is not known for having tropical storms. Tropical storms like the one of 2019, that Cyclone Idai, that Mozambique experienced. Africa is not known for tropical storms. It is not known. Now, although 2019 is far away, it's 3 years in reverse direction. It is still something to take note of. It is still. South Africa now just had a freak flood scenario. Although the floods, the casualties, meaning the people who died, who passed away, was because of poor planning coming now from the province of KwaZulu-Natal. For sure. You know, poor planning, poor allocation of land for to be lived on. That's a given, guys. That's a given. That will happen. But the amount of water, the amount of rainfall they received is what many commentators in South Africa pointed towards. They said, this is worrying. This scenario is worrying. Because even though people were building their shacks, houses, or structures on places in floodplains, in a riverbed, close to a riverbed, on the bank of a riverbed, in the vicinity of something that could look like a floodplain scenario, even though they were positioning themselves there, the amount of water they received was still the concern. Now I'm going to park it right there. I'm going to end it off for tonight's session here on the Business and Economic Zone, because the matriarch has entered. And also, even though she's indicating to me to hurry up. Let's see each other again, same time, same place tomorrow night here on your number one talk radio station of Eagle FM. And this has been your Business and Economic Zone. See you again.